This is the season of light and dark, the time of the solstice. We just celebrated the solstice last Sunday, the shortest day of the year, the most dark of the year. And this seems a very important turning point. Many of us have sort of gone back to celebrating earth-based kinds of things, and the solstice is one of those. The light and the dark have great meaning, and I have several little things that hopefully I can read to you in the next little bit, talking about the light and the dark. And if nothing else, I hope it causes you to think about it. What is the meaning of the light and the dark? What is the meaning of the two of them together? It seems that so often we tend to pose the dark as negative, the unwanted, or the so-called negative emotions or experiences, and the light as the positive. And when we do that, then often what we bring is aversion to the dark and perhaps greed or clinging to the light. So probably many of you, as as I did to some extent, sort of on the solstice breathe a sigh of relief. As a friend said to me, now the days are getting longer. Not that it's noticeable, but there's that sense, you know, that's the most dark we will have to experience. Now we can begin to experience the light. This might be particularly true in California, where we're all so accustomed and so fond of the sun and the light. But as I say, if we pose those two as positive, negative, if we bring judgment to it, then we may miss some of the lessons, particularly the lessons of the darkness. The darkness actually has much to offer us. It can be a time of quiet. Some people actually do enjoy and prefer the darkness. They feel it as a time of going inward. They image coziness and warmth and embracing the dark. But many of us don't. So what I would like to propose is that we begin to hold the two in a more equal manner. That instead of seeing one as any better than the other, that we see them as two parts, two halves of the whole, like the image of the yin and the yang, where there's no sense that one is any better than the other. And in fact, each has a little of the other in it. And this is said several ways. The light shines in the darkness, and the darkness grasps it not. This is from the Gospel of John. Darkness within darkness, the gate to all mystery. That's from Lao Tzu. So the darkness shall be the light, from Eliot. And Meister Eckhart said, truly it is in the darkness that one finds the light. So when we are in sorrow, then this light is nearest to all of us. And from China Gallant, who wrote the book Longing for Darkness, Tara and the Black Madonna. Speaking of the mystery of the heart of the solstice, there is a redeeming darkness, the darkness of ancient wisdom, of people of color, of space, of the womb, of the earth, of the unknown, of sorrow, of the imagination, the darkness of death, of the human heart, of the unconscious, of the darkness beyond light, of matter, of the descent, of the body, of the shadow, of the Most High. And this from May Sarton, a well-known poet. Help us to be the always hopeful gardeners of the Spirit, who know that without darkness, nothing comes to birth, as without light, nothing flowers. And this is a commentary. The winter landscape can appear cold and bleak, yet beneath it lies the seed that with sunlight will become a rose. In darkness is fertile power, the mystery, the great unknown. In light is the clarity and vision that come from having the courage to embrace the dark. So darkness can be seen as the source of all life. The great mystery out of which all manifestation is born. So when we talk about accepting the darkness as part of the whole and not judging it, we don't want to deny in any way the experience or the qualities of darkness. For many of us, darkness does bring fear. It may represent despair, loneliness, anger, unhappiness. And we don't want to deny that and pretend that the darkness is light or that it's all so-called wonderful. But what we do want to do is hold that, even the experience of despair or loneliness or anger or whatever we might consider the dark, to hold that as equal in importance to the so-called positive experiences, knowing that we learn from those. We learn from the so-called dark experiences, and they are not to be pushed away. When we judge one as better than the other, then we do get into aversion. We do get into resisting, wanting to push away, wanting to struggle, or if not wanting to, struggling against that. And that creates tension, that creates unpleasantness in our bodies and in the world. And it's that struggle, it's that resistance, it's that tension and tightness that we want to let go of. That isn't useful. That creates disharmony, creates enemies, sets up a separateness, a dualism, a we-they, and that's what we want to avoid. I think about social action and how often people with very, very good intentions, meaning well, unknowingly set up enemies, pose enemies, in working for something positive, set the opposite as an enemy, and can create more unpleasantness, more tension and struggle than is necessary or than is useful. And so it's not accepting the dark as well as the light does not mean inaction or is not a giving up. Nor is it a condoning. It's not saying, oh, this is okay, this is fine. Yeah, oh, fine, I accept that. That's not what it's about. But it is about holding both in an equanimous way and not setting up the dualism. Yesterday, it was such a beautiful day, and I knew I wanted to prepare for this morning, but I also wanted to be outside. So I took my dog and we went to the park. And when you have a dog, as those of you that do know, that's always an invitation for conversation. So, of course, I ran into two other people with dogs, both of whom I know. And I had my chair and, you know, my papers. And so they each asked me what I was doing. And I said I was preparing a talk for this morning. So they wanted to know what the talk was about. And I told them it was about the light and the dark and acceptance. And one person in particular stood and talked with me for quite some time. And she was really pondering this acceptance. She was pretty skeptical, you know. She said, well, I don't know. I think it's a fine line, or I think it's semantics. She said, how to know what to accept and what to change, or what to work on. And so I tried to explain from our perspective that it wasn't a matter of accepting or changing, that it was a matter of accepting and then doing whatever needed to be done. And that was difficult for her to get. She was very open and listened, but went away, you know, still kind of uncertain. I think, as Tara Brach has written about, it is a radical acceptance to accept the so-called dark, to accept the so-called negative, to accept injustice, to accept things that we think should not be, is a very radical notion and meets with much skepticism. I'll read just one section, one little piece from her book. This is talking about our so-called negative emotions. First of all, it's not our anger. It is not our pain. Everyone lives with anger, with fear, with grief. Our depression, fear, and anger are entrusted to us. I like that. That really changes the whole sense of it, doesn't it? And can be dedicated to our awakening. When we carry our pain with the kindness of acceptance instead of the bitterness of resistance, our hearts become an edgeless sea of compassion. So it's not about denying in any way or pretending there isn't despair or anger or whatever. But it's about accepting that. And in that acceptance, there's a radical shift, a radical change. Maybe some of you have experienced that in your own lives. It can be accepting another person, accepting a situation. And when you get to that point, and often, you know, it's not a one-time thing or it's not sudden, but it's a process. We work at accepting and letting go and accepting. For me, sometimes it's a very long process. And I need patience and understanding in that process. But when I get to that point of acceptance, just acceptance, not condoning, not giving up either, but just acceptance, there's a shift. There's a relaxing, and there's literally a shift in my perspective, in my attitude. So it then changes whatever that situation is. And often, the situation or the person literally changes because my acceptance allows something else to happen. So this process of accepting and letting go and accepting, it's a difficult one, I think, for the ego. Because the ego, at least mine, has certainly thought, I knew how things should be. You didn't. You know, I did. And that set up this duality, this separateness, which I ultimately came to realize was painful. You know, I didn't like that feeling of being separate. And so the ego had to give up knowing how things should be. And that's never easy, I don't think. And I can't say that I'm totally there, but I'm a lot further on the path than I was even a year ago. I'm a lot more willing to accept that I don't know. I don't know how things should be. I don't know how I should be. I don't know how the world should be. I know that I want to practice kindness and generosity and compassion, but I don't always know how things should be. I think for me anyway, to accept that I don't know also meant building a lot of trust in myself, in life, that things would unfold and that I could trust their unfolding. That continues to take a long time to develop. And it comes out of experiencing that things do unfold and things do work. And often I see in life they work much better than I ever would have created them if I had been in charge. But I see that I came from a position of not trusting and of feeling that sort of the world was out to get me, that I had to be careful. You know, I had to do it right or I was going to get in trouble, or things that happened were punishment because I hadn't done it right or I hadn't seen clearly or whatever. And I've seen how that pops up over and over and over again, sort of this negative sense of how the world operates. And that has largely shifted, although it still comes up once in a while. So now I have much more the sense, much more the feeling that, you know, the world isn't about punishment. It isn't out to get me. It isn't out to respond to every little mistake I make or every little trip up. It really is there to support me. It wants the best for me and you, not any different for me than for you. The world, the universe wants the best. I had a most wonderful experience the other night, I think it was Wednesday night, Christmas Eve, of literally feeling myself held by the universe. It was very subtle, but I just had this feeling. I knew I was held by the universe. And it was so delicious. You know, what a difference that switch makes, that I can trust that whatever happens, it's not about punishment. It's not about me being bad or me getting in trouble or something. It can be for my awakening, as Tara Brach says. It can be for my learning. So, you know, I have car trouble and I don't get to do what I was planning to do, which has happened several times. It works out. You know, it happened on New Year's Eve about 3 years ago, I think. I couldn't think of a worse time, you know. I was tired. It was late, of course, 12:30 or 1 o'clock, something like that. I couldn't believe it was happening. And you know what? It turned out to be not only not a negative experience, it was very pleasant. The tow truck driver was extremely nice, and I had cookies left over from our New Year's Eve time, which I shared with him. And he ended up taking me home, and it was, I mean, you know, it was late, and sure, I would have preferred it didn't happen, but It did, and hopefully he learned something and I learned something. And so I don't hold those experiences in such a negative way anymore. Mostly. Sometimes I do. I get caught. But then I can let go a little faster. So when I talk about acceptance, I'm thinking about accepting myself, ourselves, as we are, as well as the world. And I didn't used to do that, of course. I used to think that life was all about changing myself, you know, seeing my faults and then changing them. And I did a lot of work and I changed a lot. And now I hold that very differently. I don't want to change so much. Now what I want to do is use the qualities that I have, you know, whatever they are, whether I see them as positive or negative, but use them in a beneficial way. Sometimes I think my struggle, my pain, if I share it, is very useful for other people. So that's not so negative. Sometimes I find the things about myself that maybe I think should be a little different really can be put to use, really can be of value in the world. And so instead of changing so much anymore, I'm accepting. I'm seeing that it's a total picture. It's all of me. And all of us are a mixture of qualities, right? We all have, as Tara said, we all have anger, we all have fear, we all have pain, we all have moments of joy. We all have generosity and kindness and loving. And they are in different proportions, right? They're in different proportions within ourselves at different times. They're in different proportions for each one of us. But they all are a part of the whole of each one of us. And how much more enjoyable, how much more fun life is when I accept myself, all of me, and when I accept you, all of you. Then I truly can experience and enjoy the differences. Look at the variety. Look at the different packages we all come in. And that becomes exciting and fun rather than, you know, this is not okay and that's terrible. Oh, that's wonderful, but that is not so good. Then I learn. Then each one of you is a gift to me, is a blessing. And what a different way to look at people. What a different way to look at the world. So then I think about accepting the world as it is. And what does that mean? Accepting life just as it is. One writer, Eckhart Tolle, who wrote The Power of Now, says, you know, to do anything else is crazy. If you're going to fight against what is, you're going to lose. So anything other than acceptance doesn't make any sense. It's like banging our heads against the wall, right? We're going to lose. So the power of radical acceptance, of accepting things just as they are, which in itself begins to alleviate some of the suffering. When we don't accept, when we rail against things, we create more suffering in ourselves and in the world. And I think of the Dalai Lama as such a wonderful example of accepting things in the world just as they are. And through that radical acceptance, you know, it doesn't mean inaction, doesn't mean giving up, and it certainly doesn't mean that he condones what's happening. But he's very active. He works tirelessly. He travels, he talks, he educates for his people, to educate the world about the suffering, the plight of the Tibetan people. And yet he does not pose an enemy. He never talks about the Chinese in terms of an enemy or in ill will. He talks about my friends, the Chinese. And he recognizes that, you know, the Chinese and the Tibetans are inextricably intertwined, as all of us are, and that a solution to the problem has to be what's good for both the Tibetans and the Chinese. And how can they work together, and how can they work it out? And he's a man of great love, right, and great acceptance, great equanimity. And yet he works tirelessly for his people to preserve the culture and the religion of his people, which has been so destroyed, so decimated. So, another saying. This is a picture of a very fierce deity. And the quote is from Carl Jung. Most of you have probably heard of a very well-known psychologist. To confront a person with his own shadow is to show him his light. And then about acceptance. This is a poem from Rumi that I'm sure most, if not all of you, have heard. But it's very meaningful and fits, I think, very well with this acceptance. It's called The Guest House. This being human is a guest house. Every morning, a new arrival. A joy, a depression, a meanness. Some monetary awareness comes as an unexpected visitor. Welcome and entertain them all. Even if they're a crowd of sorrows who violently sweep your house empty of its furniture, still treat each guest honorably. He may be clearing you out for some new delight. The dark thought, the shame, the malice, meet them at the door laughing and invite them in. Be grateful for whoever comes, because each has been sent as a guide from beyond. It reminds me of the Buddha on the night of his awakening, when Mara visited him. And rather than pushing him away, saying, "Go away, Mara, I don't want you," he didn't exactly invite him in, but he did say, "Mara, I see you." He acknowledged him, and in that sense, welcomed him. What a radical acceptance if we could welcome the unpleasant, the difficult, the challenging, the dark, so-called. Welcome it, whatever feeling, as a gift, as a lesson, as an opening, as contributing to our awakening. Again, not that we have to go seeking it, and we all know plenty of darkness comes without seeking it, right? But when it comes, accept it. It can teach us, we can learn from it, and in that sense, it has light, so that the darkness has the light within it, and the light has the darkness within it. Probably you've all experienced, as I have, that within any tragedy or darkness or negativity, we see light. We can see some positive, some hope, some not so dark. And likewise, within any light, any so-called pleasant or wonderful experience, we can sense the dark. We can sense the shadow. We can sense that there's more to this than just light. And that's why I think the symbol for the yin and the yang, the light and the dark. That's almost like a dancing, you know? And each has a part of the other within it. It's so meaningful for accepting both and holding them with equanimity. I think that word equanimity is so important, because that doesn't mean, as I've said, either condoning or pushing away, just holding it as what is, holding it with equanimity. So we have about 10 minutes. I'd love to hear some comments from you, sharings, questions.
Thank you very much for your comments. A couple of years ago in November, when it was really dark at rush hour, I got a flat tire on Central Expressway and had to put my flat tire and cross four lanes of traffic to get out of the way, and the people, you know, horning and yelling out the window. And somehow or another, I just sort of shrugged my shoulders and said I had to drive it and just deal with it, even though it was kind of terrifying in a way. But it was very odd that as soon as I decided to just ride it away, the whole texture of the whole evening changed. The police showed up. They were really kind and wonderful. Put flames around my car so it wouldn't get hit. Showed up to ask if I was okay. The tow truck driver was very kind. And it was, ordinarily I would have gone into this frenzy of fretting and anxiety and frustration and anger, you know, whole gallon.
Fear. Exactly. Thank you. Yeah, that's a beautiful example.
I wonder about situations where you know that a person or a group of people is pushing you and is punishing you and trying to hurt you, and how you, I mean, how can you come to an acceptance of that as opposed to, I mean, maybe making a decision that no, this is not okay?
Yes, and sometimes those decisions, setting those limits or whatever, is very important. This accepting something does not mean, oh yeah, that's okay, go ahead, push me around, you know, hurt me or whatever. That's not what it's about. But it is about not having aversion, so that, and that may seem very difficult in a situation where you're being pushed or harmed or something is happening that is not okay. But it is possible to meet that without aversion. To accept that, okay, this is what's happening. Now, what am I going to do? And when we're in aversion, then, you know, we may be angry, we may be pushing back, we may use very unskillful means to deal with it. We create tension in ourselves, unhappiness, disharmony, etc., and we pose an enemy, and it ends up being this struggle. And often, feeling very justified, you know, in certain situations we may go to court and, you know, the whole thing, and we're feeling very self-righteous about the whole thing. But it's very unpleasant for everybody. And a judgment might be rendered, but, you know, nobody's happy about it. A different way is to accept with equanimity that this is what's happening, sort of like the Dalai Lama, but without posing an enemy, without making the people that are harming you bad or wrong or terrible, at the same time setting whatever limit you need to set. And, you know, this may take some struggle, some lot of thought and working with it on your part to find out exactly what that is. Sort of like the Dalai Lama, who, of course, to be as equanimous as he is, has not only is reincarnated, but has studied and practiced all his life to get to that point of holding terrible, terrible sufferings, harm to his people, without posing an enemy, without making those harming the Tibetans his enemy. Does that? Well, sometimes that's very helpful, yes. Sometimes that's very helpful, not to take things so personally. That, as Tara says, we're all entrusted with these feelings. These things happen. And very often, if something is being done to us, it really is more about that other person than it is us. It affects us, of course, and in that way can feel very personal. But it's so often not really about us. It's about the other person. It might be about their fear, their greed, their despair, whatever. And we end up being the recipients, but it is not so much about us. So yeah, not taking it so personally can be very helpful. It's also sometimes very difficult. When it's happening to you, it's very difficult not to take it personally.
Yeah. Okay. A couple of things. One is in this practice of no preference, it's like there's another part of the brain that does the no preference that you can step back from. So it's not the engaged part of the brain that's feeling the pain and the suffering, but it's the judgmental part, I think, does that you can soften and just acceptance. I found in practicing this that it's also good to practice it on the light side instead of just the dark side. So whenever something good happens is to say, oh, that's what that joyful thing feels like. And it helps in being able to train the mind to do the same thing for an adversity, something that.
Yes, yes. That is a very important part that I didn't mention, but that's right. It's just as important to hold the joy or the positive with equanimity as it is the dark. Mm-hmm. Yes?
Along those lines, this is sort of a different side of it, but I just got back from a school vacation, and my sister was trying to teach me how to go down better, and she said you have to go down the steepest part and face down. It'll be much easier if you face down, which is called the follow-up. And every impulse in your body is saying don't go sideways. But then sometimes I would face down, and it was amazing. It was just sort of a totally different experience. And that was one of those things where it's kind of like you have to face the steepness and face the hard part, and then it becomes, I guess, easier in a way.
Yes. Mm-hmm. I think the children have arrived. Anything else? Let's sit for just one moment. Will you ring the bell, Kim? Okay.